That's kind of soft.
Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
This is the Short Coat Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Etler. And I'm here with Dylan Todd.
Hello.
I'm here with Mark Torrell.
What's up?
Here with Aline Sanduk.
Hello.
And Corey Christensen.
Hello, hello.
So, yeah, we're just hanging out here in the communities.
Rainy day.
At the College of Medicine. Rainy day. And I just want to say two things before we get started today with our main topic, which is congratulations to the world, because now, as of today, the Supreme Court has decided that everybody has the right to get married.
Yay!
Yay!
Mm-hmm. Not sure why you wanted to do that, but I'm just kidding, honey. I'm just kidding, sweetie. But yeah, the Supreme Court has decided that it's fine for everybody to get married. So that's kind of cool.
I think you should be more specific for our international listeners.
Oh yeah. Yes. So for those of you who have had this belief forever, we've decided that gay and lesbian and trans, everybody can get married.
For all the letters.
Experience
any letter you want.
Experience all the joys and sorrows of marriage. Be able to obviously this will have implications for medicine too, because at least in terms of say visiting your significant other in the mm-hmm. hospital won't be as much of a problem as it's been in the past, where people have been barred from visiting severely ill people in the hospital because they are not quote unquote family. And I'm sure there are other implications. Can you think of any others? Other benefits?
You die, does your spouse get your benefits?
Right.
Does the law recognize your spouse?
Can you get health insurance or can you be on their insurance? Can they be on your insurance?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of things like that. So that's pretty cool. And the other bit of news from the Supreme Court, obviously the Affordable Care Act subsidies were upheld by the Supreme Court. So
yay,
kind of two victories for some of us. For others, they will continue to fight, even though, it's done. Guys.
But America's growing up, you guys. This is great. We're being more mature about things. We're taking really adult decisions.
No, we're not. I won't be. No, I won't accept it.
Yeah.
The Confederate flag.
But the court says that we have.
Yeah, that's going on.
The Confederate flag should remain flying. It's a symbol.
I just like how slavery. It looks like an X. So it's like, no.
It's very negative.
Yeah.
What did it? I mean,
well, it kind of looks. Doesn't it look a little bit like the British flag? Can't really.
The Union Jack is what you're. Yeah, the Union Jack.
A tiny bit.
So
actually,
it goes a little farther. Yeah.
When I pull up an image of the Union Jack in my head,
yeah,
it looks like.
That's what I'm saying.
Flag.
Yeah, like I don't have a picture that I'm looking at, but. Right.
Fun fact:
Union Jack has the cross mm-hmm. and the diagonals.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
So yes, there are lines in that.
Yeah. So there's a start.
I think the British Empire actually supported the Confederacy in the Civil War. Like, they wanted the country to split apart.
They were just bitter,
of course.
Yeah. I don't remember.
I wasn't born then.
Young.
Yeah, it was a while back. I was very young.
A twinkle in your great grandfather's eye.
Yeah.
I was reading an article this week, and I will, of course, post the link for your edification. The guy who wrote this article is a Vancouver, BC doc, and he says that he's always gotten these vague complaints from his patients. Among them, my eyes are tired. I think all physicians sort of run into these weird complaints that seem to have no basis in fact. Tired eyes in this case, meaning, I don't know. Eyes don't get tired, he says. They get sore. They get, runny. They get, teary, whatever. But, there's nothing in there to get tired. And then he started to get tired eyes himself. And so he began to wonder about, this role of magic in medicine. Is there a role for magic in medicine? When people complain of these things that don't exist, where we can't find results, where there's no physical finding, you know, what does it mean? Is it magic? Is it bull? Is it you know, what is it? How do I fix these things? Do you need something magical to fix them? Do you need to, you know, grind up some herbs and throw them into your eyeballs?
I mean, I guess the answer to that is if it works, but then it's not really magic, is it? I think that he kind of oversteps himself a little bit by saying that there's no reason for tired eyes, because I would argue that everything has a reason, whether we understand it yet or not. I think it's more of a yet kind of thing rather than some enigmatic phenomenon that is just forever beyond our reach. I think it's just something that, I mean, tired eyes, for example, doesn't have nearly the impact on people's lives that something like cancer might. So the priority to find out what tired eyes is just much lower on the list. I think that it's just something that we really haven't taken the time to truly understand. And it could be much more psychological, which is at this point still very difficult.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's just psychosomatic. I mean, that's kind of the two like escape hatches for doctors is like, oh, it's idiopathic, which means we don't know. Or it's psychosomatic. So it could be anything. It's psychosomatic, right? I mean, hysterectomy, hysteria, that word comes from, you know, doctors thought it was caused by like the woman's wandering uterus, you know, like it's just like, you know, sometimes doctors have used, you know, like a something with the body to explain the mind, but I think now we're finding that the other way around.
But we have all sorts of ideas about things that seem to veer more into magic than they do into evidence. I mean, yes, we have evidence-based medicine curricula in medical schools. We have, we have researchers who are spending a lot of their time and a lot of money to seek out the evidence. And yet at the same time, we have other portions of the curricula that seem to deal more in the magical, or at least things that we don't have an explanation for, or don't have an understanding of, things like alternative medicine curriculum.
I mean, it's definitely real. Patients don't just interrupt their lives to go to the doctor for no reason.
No, the complaints are real. Yeah. Are the therapies, you know, for instance, does the fact that we don't have an explanation for why a therapy works or might, you know, or evidence for even that it does work, does that invalidate the therapy? I think some people might believe that it does.
I would say that it could, but the better answer is that we don't know yet, and it would be premature to just get rid of something that seems like it could be working because there's no solid support for it. But if there's evidence against it, or if there's been negative results of things, in comparison to something we know works based on evidence. And I think that's where you get into alternative medicine. And I think I just hate the term alternative medicine, because I just feel like if it works, it should just be called medicine. And an alternative to medicine is just kind of a dumb way to say it. Like, well, what are you using
it for?
Well,
some people are using the word like complementary.
Right. I would like complementary better. But again, like, what are you complementing? I would argue that it all should be considered medicine if it's working to help people feel better, essentially.
Well, I think aside from, you know, plant substances, I think like the cornerstone behind a lot of alternative medicine practices is that they affect the mind-body axis, which is important in how patients feel. And I mean, you know, the placebo effect is just, it's basically just, you know, and sometimes it can be more effective than placebo, but I think the mechanism is the same. I mean, if placebo partially works on expectation. So, I mean, if you don't expect pills to work for you, and you try something that you do expect to work for you, then I think you get a stronger mind-body manipulation, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we know that even for medicines that, you know, we know for a fact work, you know, like tranquilizers, if you're sufficiently...
Sorry.
If you're sufficiently keyed up...
Medicines.
You know, if you're sufficiently keyed up, you're not going to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
At least not until you're not keyed up anymore.
Right.
So there's that connection between, you know, mind and body, I guess.
I mean, they did some experiments where they did sham acupuncture, which is just like putting needles at the same depth, the same amount, but just not along like Chinese energy meridians.
So like any place, you know.
Just any place. They still had a Chinese person doing it. It just said like, okay, now just like pretend like you didn't read any like ancient acupuncture texts, and people had the same results. So, it's kind of a silly experiment. You know, you might argue, like, why are you even doing it? But it shows that, you know, there's nothing especially important, you know, like, because the Chinese energy meridians don't necessarily align with, you know, any anatomic, like, you know, where certain nerves are in the body. So, I mean, there isn't like a overlap of the mechanism, but
what if it's just a function of like allowing the person to escape the situation that is actually causing their biological problem? I have a theory, and I don't know how many people would agree with this, but I have a theory that like a significant portion of disease is the result of just us not living natural lives. It's just the result of society stifling us and suffocating us to the point where like our bodies just can't take the psychological pressure. So we start getting these weird problems.
Like somatization or something like that.
Yeah.
Or psychosocial.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to say that people don't have real health problems.
I have existential joint pain.
No, but I mean, I think, you know, the pressure of having a job that you hate and having a boss who hammers on you all the time. Like, I think people think that like, oh, well, that's just your life. Like, you just have to deal with that. But what if that is actually the source of a lot of major health problems?
Oh, it is. It's called stress.
Yeah. Well, and maybe, you know, stress manifests in different ways. Like,
of course, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I think Western society has higher levels of stress than, you know, other types of living. Yeah. And I think it definitely, stress people are unhealthy. It does shorten your life. And sugar is another thing that shortens your life. So this sugar is enjoyable.
I have a suggestion. If you're feeling stressed out and you're having existential joint pain, go and search on YouTube for primitive skills videos. So these are the people who, you know, they know how to go out in the woods and build a shelter. So this just came up yesterday. I was like, you know, I'm not sure that I was feeling especially tense, but I was watching this YouTube video of this guy, like, you know, basically go out and he goes out into the woods. He's wearing a pair of shorts, nothing else. And he's like hammering together, you know, he makes an axe with a stone, and then he makes, you know, he cuts down some trees and, you know, whatnot, and then turns it into a mud shelter with a fireplace. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, at the end of it, he's got, you know, a better house than I do. And, and like, you know, there was something profoundly relaxing about watching this, you know, simple act. Hmm. So anyway, there's my stress relief tip of the day.
I like to watch people's cochlear implants get turned on. It's really
So it's the really same thing, pretty much.
Okay, no, so now that you've mentioned something that my wife does for a living, she turns on people's cochlear implants.
Wow,
no way!
And here's what she tells me about it. So these people, this is going to ruin it. I'm sorry, I'm going to warn you ahead of time. This is going to ruin it. So the reason people are crying is not because they're feeling some sort of joy necessarily. It's because they are overwhelmed by this new electrical stimulus inside their heads that is just overwhelming their nervous systems. It is overwhelming, apparently, because it's not like real hearing. They're not hearing in the way that you and I think. They're hearing, they're feeling, they may actually be feeling it. Sort of like, you know, I guess you could liken it to synesthesia, but it's not really that. But basically, they're feeling these electrical things in their head, and it's making them uncomfortable, but it's like overwhelming them.
Yeah, their brains reshaped itself with the absence. Yeah.
When they've turned it on, it hasn't done that yet.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's not like tuned to use those ears. Mm.
So if you, I mean, they may actually be feeling, you know, sort of excitement, but it's you know, so anyway, sorry I ruined it.
But it's okay. I can hear perfectly. The world's so beautiful.
Exactly.
Well, actually, the actual output from the cochlear implants is kind of terrifying. Like, if you listen to like an 8 or a 16 channel cochlear implant, like, music is just like,
I think it probably sounds a lot like this.
Yeah, at first.
Until your brain figures out what to do with it.
Yeah.
Or even after that.
Yeah. I mean, definitely speech is is what it's just, like, truly helpful for. But I think people who have cochlear implants don't enjoy music. It's just like weird. You don't have enough information about the music to make it enjoyable.
You can only transmit a certain number of frequencies, whereas music has like hundreds of different frequencies.
And here's another interesting thing about cochlear implants. They don't know, in a lot of cases, they don't know why they're why it's working. So there are a lot of people for whom one program in their cochlear implant works great, and that same program for somebody who has the same set of clinical parameters to deal with doesn't work at all. There are some people who experience vast improvements, and there are some people who experience no improvements. And it seems to be, according to Christine, seems to be, you know, you just fiddle with stuff until it works. And for some people, it never works, and there's no explanation as to why. So there's a little bit of magic right there. You know, like, we don't know. We just keep, we sometimes talk like we know, but the truth is we really don't know what's going on in there. Just sometimes it seems to work out.
But I prefer the word mystery. Anytime you use the word like magic, I think
there's an implication it implies, of an intent to deceive.
And like an unattainability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, was it Asimov who said, this is going to be awesome.
Asimov.
Was it Asimov who said that any sufficiently advanced science is indistinguishable from magic?
Primary literature.
I think
indeed.
It was. I mean, yeah. If you don't understand it, it's going to look like magic. But okay, we'll agree to disagree to call it mystery.
Oh, okay, good. I thought you were going to. I thought you were going to fight me on it.
No.
Can we call it systematic error?
Systematic. Yes.
I don't know.
My life.
Wait, are we due for a break yet?
You know, hell with it.
All right,
we'll take a break. Hang on, we'll be back in just a second on the Shortcode Podcast.
I like it. Spontaneity.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
What other, can you think of other sources of mystery in medicine?
I mean, lots of drugs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drugs that we'll give, like, from a plant. But, I mean, that's originally how a lot of drugs came to be, and we don't understand the mechanism necessarily for how these things are working. A lot of drugs in the brain, especially, too, like the things we use to, like, try on depression and, I mean, these pain disorders, like, what is it called? Myofascial pain, where it's a trigger point, a physical trigger point on the body. So, like, a lot of people get it up on their trapezius muscle here, and you can push down on, like, I mean, John has this, on a certain spot, and it'll send, like, a jolt of just like terrible pain through your body, but there's no anatomical basis that anyone's been able to figure out, and kind of
the energy meridian, that's why.
Yeah, that's got to be it. Put a needle there.
Yeah.
There's I mean, the drugs, the treatment regimens for it is essentially like, well, we'll try these antidepressants, we'll try these anti-seizure medications, and like some work for some don't. But I mean, that the basis of that is we don't really understand the mechanism for
patients have caught on to that, though. You know, like,
oh, sure.
I was talking to someone, and
gabapentin's a big one.
She asked me about gabapentin, and she's like, is this the drug that the doctor gives you if he thinks your pain is bullshit? I was like, yeah, I'm sorry.
What's gabapentin? What is it? In what cases?
So it was originally used for seizures, right? Usually what those drugs do is they kind of tend to depress the electrical stimulation, the little electrical storms that your brain can make. But I mean, that's probably an oversimplification. Like, I mean, it's definitely an oversimplification.
Neurotransmitter GABA, like that?
I don't know if it's involved in GABA.
I think it's actually calcium channel blocker, I think. And I hope I'm not wrong, because I
think you're right.
You're on the record now.
Because I remember when I was studying for step one, I would be like cabapentin, like calcium. Oh, geez.
Step
one. So anyway, yeah. So patients definitely know about, you know, like, oh, we'll just throw an antidepressant at them because we don't really know how to treat it.
And I think, I mean, these things still do definitely work sometimes, but I don't think that necessarily makes us have to say it's magic. I mean, It's something. There's it's something out. There's some reason
excuse
that
me.
It's working.
Dylan has already
told us. Oh, mystery, mystery.
Mystery.
Excuse me. We've modified our terms.
Yeah. But yeah, and when you said patience sort of are on to us, or you. I always say us, like I'm the, you know,
yeah.
Sorry.
You're one of us.
I don't want to misrepresent myself.
No, no, no.
But look, patients are also sort of exposed daily to what I would like to call scientific reversal, which is, and this is more has to do with probably the media than it does with.
Do you mean like Dr. Oz or what?
Kind of
no,
like.
I think he's
I think I'm going at like the media, you know, they'll hear on the news.
Oh,
like,
the flip flop.
Yeah.
Well, a good example is dietary fat.
Oh, yeah.
That all came out and it was the huge media article that like fat gives you artery disease. Like
fat
in your diet.
Fat.
Like calories and fat. Yeah. Which is like actually not at all how it works to the extent.
Well, not only that, but then, you know, there's sort of the calories is calories. And then I've started reading very recently about that, you know, claims anyway. And I don't know how to, you know, personally, I don't know how to like process this information, but
it's hard.
But, you know, I've started reading claims like, well, you're like, what was the article the other day? Oh, yeah. If you have a lot of salt along with the fat that you eat, that does something where, you know, you don't absorb the salt. And I'm like, okay, what?
That sounds really awesome. From a dietary perspective, like salt and fat?
Yeah.
But you're saying I can have both?
It sounds awesome. I'd like to squeeze, you know, like wring out some bacon and, you know,
salt it up. Yeah.
Mice who apparently fed high fat diets along with high salt didn't gain the same weight that, I don't know, low fat diet mice ate. So there you go.
The thing too is you find a lot of the flip flopping in diet, especially. And that kind of makes sense because scientifically, like, how do you really study that? Like, this is something that's taking place over someone's entire life. Like, you can't, like, and on top of that, even people that are done in dietary studies, like, with the length of the study, that alone ignored, I mean, how are you positive that this is exactly what they're eating at these times and things like that?
Put them in a box.
There's so many, but see, you can't put people in a box.
Oh, yeah, of course you can.
For their whole lives, yeah. That's what we'd all want, right?
It's called Big Brother, right?
Yeah.
But have cameras everywhere.
You know what might make that clearer is the advent of all of these little biometric self-recording devices.
I don't like
that
those.
People are. You don't like them?
I don't
Why?
Like
Talk.
Them.
I want to hear this.
Well, I think you're volunteering information that I think can be used against you. I'm not saying that this lady did not do a wrong thing, but it was an example of how your Fitbit or whatever it is can be used against you. And it's actually a woman who, she claimed to have been raped, but then they looked at her Fitbit data and said that during the time when she would have been asleep, she was just up and walking around. And it made me realize, like, it's just another way for people to surveil me, and now I never want to own one again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why I don't switch out my phone. I want a busted up broken phone because it's probably a lot harder to pick up information about me from this.
It's probably too late. That's an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. But
Dave, if you were walking around with a flip phone, I think I would go for that. But you know,
just, you want to get some walkie talkies? Even that.
Yeah.
That ship has sailed for
Dave,
you.
That's like you when you went to Disney World.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
the tracking devices that you're essentially saying, yeah,
lose
I'll
your
wear
kid.
This. And so they have these. Were you there for this?
Yeah, you talked to me about this.
But
tell the audience because I don't know.
Okay, if you didn't listen before, when you go to Disney World now, they give you a wristband and you wear it, and it simplifies your life tremendously. Okay, when you're in Disney World, you know, it does everything from allows you to pay for meals, open your hotel room door, get into the park, get your picture taken. Every last little thing you now do.
Probably find families.
Well, exactly. They have a close-up chip, and then they have a long-distance chip. And so they can pretty much tell where you are in the park. They can track your movements. They can, you know, whether that's aggregate or not. It hasn't been quite revealed by Disney, and I wouldn't either. But yeah, so it's amazing stuff. But you know, people are willing to give up, you know, this sort of information about themselves in order to have a good time.
I prefer privacy over convenience every time.
Really?
99% of the time. If you have children, that's different. I'd give up my information if it protected my kids better. But in general, I don't know. I just don't like this trend of people being like, look, my phone knows everything about me. And I'm like, it's not your phone. It's a person who's trying to market things to you and wants to understand you better, to understand what your turnkeys are and your weaknesses are to get your money.
Yeah. Well, when I first realized that what I search on Google shows up in Facebook advertisements. That kind of disturbed me a little bit because, you know, no one ever really told me that. Like, that was never like, it never really like surfaced in any significant way to me. And I just, you know what it was actually is it was, I'm being in medical school. I was searching the pathways for like the tickle response. Like, if you're tickling someone, like, what is going on there? All right, this is just my personal computer. I just want to know. Late at night, I'm curious.
This is weird. I did the same thing the other day. I looked up.
Did you actually?
Tickling.
Okay, well let me. I might be able to predict your fate here.
My 11-year-old asked me, like, why? Why are people ticklish?
And yeah.
I'm like, let me look it up.
Well, you know,
what's going to happen now?
Well, the next couple days, like, it was kind of quiet until, like, one day I'm just kind of scrolling through my newsfeed on Facebook, and there's just this big advertisement with just, like, 4 half-naked guys. And, yeah, and big letters across the top. It says, like, endurance reality tickling competition, like, sign up now, and, like, all the contact information. I'm like, what is this? Like, what did I like? Like, what did I do? And then I'm like, wait a second, no. This is because I searched about tickling, and they're like, oh, he's interested in tickling. We got something for him. And so, but like, it's, I mean, honestly, I'm more of a sprint tickler than an endurance, so they didn't even market me right.
Oh, God.
So really embarrassing on their part.
Failure right there.
But no, that was the moment when I was just like, well, yeah, nothing is sacred anymore.
Yeah. Google figured out pretty quickly when I started medical school, actually, mm-hmm. and I started getting targeted ads for medical students. It's true.
Well, I've read that, you know, Target can tell to within a very short amount of time when you got pregnant just by what you do in their stores and what you look at, what you buy.
Wasn't there a girl who got pregnant and then had an abortion, but based on like her purchases from Target, they started sending her like coupons for like diapers, and her parents figured it out.
I was always amazed, even back in, what was it, 2004, my wife was pregnant with mm-hmm. with our first kid, like how soon all of a sudden shit started showing up at our house, you know, like free samples of, you know, diapers and stuff. And I'm like, what?
I don't like that.
How does that even happen?
I don't like that.
They know.
I know.
They shouldn't.
And the thing is, we have this grand argument going on about like, oh, privacy must be preserved. And like, arguably, it's kind of dead. Like,
it's done.
Especially anything you do on technology.
And like, that was in 2004, you said.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just 2015.
If they know so much about us.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know how technology
Internet.
I'm listening.
If they know so much about us, then why aren't real criminals being brought to justice? Why are they going after small peanuts like us? Like people who are...
Wait a minute. How do we get into...
Well, here's the thing. No offense.
Canadian term.
No, go. I want to hear this.
I don't think I'm a small-time criminal.
For example...
Easy peanut. I'm at least a cashew.
Well, so you hear about like child pornography rings getting busted. Mm-hmm. And when I hear of things like that, I'm like, okay, that I think is a justifiable use of people's private data, because you're preventing a real crime from happening. Or, you know, for example, if you find out a millionaire is harboring money abroad and they're not paying their taxes, that actually really hurts our country when people don't pay their taxes. But then they go after smaller crime. Like, my fear is that you have this thing that can be used for good, but ultimately someone's going to find a way to use it for bad.
I mean, is this just a fear of yours, or do you have like a particular example?
Well, she mentioned the example before with the Fitbit that allowed the prosecutor.
I'm not
granted that woman was in a rape situation though, and apparently was lying about it.
Yeah.
So
I'm just saying mm-hmm. that, you know, that maybe that was a poor example mm-hmm. just for the fact that I was bringing up a person who was caught in a lie. But I don't know. I can't mm-hmm. explain it. It just gives me.
Well, if you were a follower of
feeling.
Serial, you learned that, you know, and this was a long time ago, but you learned that technology in that case was used to support arguments about where people were. So specifically cell tower information was used to support arguments about where people were during the time that events were alleged to have taken place. And it turns out that information was completely unreliable, at least back then, completely and utterly unreliable. The information they gathered didn't support the claims that they were being made, and yet somebody was convicted for it. Who's to say that, you know, that Fitbit was actually providing real information? I don't know.
I mean, that's still an issue too, because wasn't it, there's recently, not so recently, maybe a couple weeks or months ago, that article published about how even genetic tests for in criminal cases are not nearly accurate as they lead us to believe. They lead us to believe this is a well-established 100% success rate kind of thing, and they just are not.
Yeah, it was, in fact, FBI trained and even in some cases labs within the FBI, I think, where the, you know, basically, I don't know, was it lying? Were they lying? Were they?
I really forget.
Misinterpreting the accuracy of
it's
the
organizations trying to justify their existence and justify funding, I think. Like, overstating the importance of their methods is probably a way for them to get money from Congress.
Well, I mean, a prime example of that is, I mean, the recent big surveillance of privacy. What is it? I'm just completely blanking. Essentially, government looking at everything that we can send on phones and
Prism.
Things. Prism. Yeah. What is that organization called, though? Is that what it is?
NSA.
Skynet. Right, Skynet. Though?
Yeah, I mean,
no such agency.
Skynet's a little more robots, though.
And now?
We're not there yet.
As of the broadcast next week, we will be on some sort of watch list.
Here we go.
In case any robots are listening,
yes,
I praise our robot overlords.
We will all be invited to underground tickling rings.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's gonna be on all our news feeds.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is wise to confess, but I now have this urge to see an underground tickling fest.
I don't think it was underground. It was very public.
I want to go to a tickling contest.
I told this story to someone more recently.
How long can you endure?
It sounds terrible. Torture. Sounds horrible. But seriously, if you get curious and want to see it, it's on Google, because I double checked.
I like that you used the word curious to describe this like vaguely homoerotic ad that you saw.
It's okay. We love you. You can still get married.
That's the goal.
I mean, I'm straight, so I don't know what to tell you, people.
You can still get this. Supreme Court is fine with you. It's okay.
Yeah.
So, so what did you tell your son about what you discovered about tickling? Because I have my theory about tickling.
I don't think we finished the conversation.
Potentially poisonous insects crawling on our ancestors, and so tickling is kind of like it is uncomfortable. I think it's found like a new context, you know, in nuclear families. But I think it used to be like if you were being tickled, there was like something that could bite you.
That's interesting, like, because we play Tickle Spider in my house.
Oh,
so you know the Tickle Spider's coming to get you.
I think you're right too.
I hope he never moves anywhere where there are actual spiders and he has some like trying to recapture his like.
I've ruined the neural pathway that prevents people from.
No, I think that's a good point, Dylan. I think it might be a little less bugs, because I feel like tickling involves more pressure. But I mean, essentially what happens when you get tickled is you like initiate like an escape reflex. Makes sense to me that it would be some kind of.
What about pair bonding? Because I feel like that's applicable too.
You mean like between two people?
Yeah, tickling people is a pair bonding. No.
I mean, you could have likened that to, like crying and laughing together too. So that's another good point.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So okay, here I have a funny story. So like a couple months ago,
I've been bonded ever since the tickling competition.
the tickle of 06.
No, but here's the thing.
Tickle.
My partner and I both got home and it was really late and I had just spent all day studying and he, you know, worked kind of a long shift and we just didn't feel like watching TV, but we were both so brain tired we didn't really have a lot to talk about. So we ended up just like taking turns tickling each other and laughing. And then just like tired ourselves out and then went to bed. But it was like,
is this a euphemism?
No, it was like, we just like, I don't know, we like to lay on opposite sides of the couch and then we put each other's feet in the opposite person's lap.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had something on the TV and I just got bored with it. So I just started clamping his toes and his laugh was so cute and endearing that I died and I couldn't stop. And then he started doing it to me and then it was really nice.
Well, that's a good point too, because tickling does have the laughter component.
It does.
Which would be kind of odd to be like being torn apart by a lion. And No, stop.
So just give it a chance. Try
That's
it.
Weird that pair bonding and having a giant centipede crawling on your body can have the same.
Well, it's evolution, so it's like whatever works. yeah, regardless of the uses. Far, yeah. Maybe. I mean, it may have started as what Dylan said and then taken right. on a social meaning. So right. it's, yeah. who knows?
Mm-hmm. I feel like we know Aline a whole lot better.
Oh, a lot. Yeah.
We're bonding right now.
Than we did yesterday. Perhaps I can use this on the show somehow to, like, you know, Dylan, this is the first time you've been on the show, but, mm-hmm. you know, maybe in the future, I will just tickle people into being on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whatever tickles your fancy.
Congratulations to be the last person to be on the show that wasn't tickled first.
Oh, Dave. Man, what an honor. Thank
Dave,
you.
Dave Tickle Monster Edler.
Yeah. I'm here
for you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being with us today. I want to point out that we've learned a lot about Aline today. Again,
you're welcome. You're
we've
welcome.
Learned a lot about the mysteries and the mysteries in medicine, or at least we've talked a lot about it. I don't know if we've learned anything, but it's been fun. Mm-hmm. And we have after the credits today, we'll have a another weird disease of the week. So stay tuned for that. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you guys.
If you like what you learned today on the Short Code Podcast, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth, if something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcode.com. Do follow us and talk to us on Twitter so that we can all stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. Short Code is made possible by this strange world we live in and a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine student government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey without an E Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Stay tuned for Weird Disease of the Week. Dylan Todd, what's our weird disease of the week?
Our weird disease of the week is Munchausen's by proxy.
Oh.
And so psychiatric diseases don't get as much attention as somatic diseases, I guess. But I first learned about this disease because my friend John Pienta sent me an article published by Vice. It's called My Grandma the Poisoner, if you'd like to read it.
We will post a link to that.
Okay, great. Yeah. And basically the story is of this person's grandmother would frequently poison her own family members, and it was kind of known by everyone in the family that, like, if you stayed at grandma's house,
oh,
like
shit.
you would start to feel like terrible, and so, like, you know, people wouldn't eat her food, and like the family kind of started to catch on, and it was kind of this family secret, and I don't think anyone turned grandma in, but just kind of
you don't want to turn grandma in. I mean,
no,
gosh. Grandma's she makes you poison pies.
Yeah, but the weird thing about this disease is that, I mean, in some respects, even though it's kind of awful, you know, the motivation is, you know, taking care of someone, but you just want that to be very convenient for you, so you make it happen, you know.
So wow, that sounds...
It's kind of sweet and creepy at the same time, probably like grandma's food, so...
Okay.
Oh.
All right, well, thank you very much.